This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
The Forest Lakes Community Association held a town hall meeting at Hollymead Elementary on July 1, 2008, to discuss the safety of the Route 29 intersection, where a fatal accident occurred earlier this year. A 16-year-old Albemarle High School student, Sydney Akes, was killed on May 9, 2008, turning out of Forest Lakes South from Ashwood Boulevard onto Route 29 South when a tractor-trailer driver on Route 29 North failed to stop at the red light. The Virginia Department of Transportation has investigated the circumstances of the accident and presented their findings and recommendations to the community at the meeting. Afterwards, over 20 residents asked questions about a number of issues relating to the intersection. There were over 150 members of the public in attendance. Charlottesville Tomorrow's coverage begins with Dave Shiflett, president of the Forest Lakes Community Association.
We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Dave Shiflett, and I'm the president of the Forest Lakes Community Association. On behalf of the Forest Lakes Community Association, I welcome all of our community members coming to this meeting, as well as panel members. The purpose of the meeting tonight is for VDOT to present a just-completed safety assessment study of the intersection of Ashwood Boulevard that was completed subsequent to a tragic accident that we met. That is the purpose of the meeting. I do ask that we keep discussions at the end to that and utilize other forums to discuss such matters as temporary development and the bypass. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce our panel. Delegate Rob Bell, there he is, Delegate Bell, the Virginia House of Delegates, representing the 58th District. Mr. John Davies, the Hooker District Representative of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Mr. Ken Boyd, Chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Mr. Robert Tucker, Albemarle County Executive. Mr. Juan Graves, Albemarle County Transportation Planner. Sergeant Pete Mainzer, Albemarle County Police Department. Mr. Alan Sumter, VDOT Shultzville Residency Administrator. And his staff, and I'd also like to welcome Denise Lumster, our Albemarle County Council's attorney. We'll start the meeting with Sergeant Mainzer, who's going to make some brief comments as to the some recent traffic enforcement measures that's been taken along our corridor of Route 29. We'll then go into VDOT's presentation of the safety assessment of the intersection. And then after that, we'll take a short break and then come back with comments and questions from the community. And I'll turn it over to the second panel.
Thanks, Dave. Good evening, everybody. My name is Pete Mainzer, and I'm a sergeant with the Albemarle County Police Department. I'm the supervisor of the traffic unit, which has the primary responsibilities of motor vehicle accident investigation, and to increase safety through enforcement. On behalf of Chief Miller and the dedicated men and women of the Albemarle County Police Department, I appreciate the opportunity to share in some discussion with you this evening about traffic safety at the intersection of Seminole Trail and Ashwood Boulevard. Traffic-related incidents continue to be one of the leading calls for service in our agency. This includes traffic accidents, traffic congestion, disabled vehicles, road hazards, and reports of aggressive driving, reckless driving, and intoxicated drivers. Ensuring the safe and orderly movement of traffic is one of the primary missions of our agency. Traffic issues are a countywide problem. Our agency investigates somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 motor vehicle crashes every year. This averages out to about 8 accidents per day that we investigate. The result of all this is about $12 million in property damage annually and over 1,000 people being injured. In order to address the growing problem of traffic issues, our agency last summer assigned two additional officers and one additional supervisor to the traffic unit. The result of all this has been some enhanced enforcement along some of our problem highways to address some of the causation factors in many of our automobile crashes. And the typical causation factors in many of our crashes include following drivers who are following too close, speeding, failing to yield the right-of-way, failing to obey a traffic signal, and driver inattention. By the end of last year, our agency had issued almost 11,000 traffic summonses. That's about 30 per day. This is a 32% increase over 2006 when we issued 8,300 traffic summonses. So far this year, we're on mark to meet or exceed the 11,000 total from last year. In 2007, our agency issued 284 summonses for traffic light violations, red light violations. And so far this year, we've issued 176 violations for red lights. Out of the 176 that we've issued so far this year, 133 occurred along Seminole Trail. The top five intersections where we've been, we've focused our enforcement efforts and generated high numbers of red light summonses include the intersections with Hydraulic Road, Ashwood Boulevard, Polo Grounds Road and Ryle Mills Road, the Ryle Road intersection, and the Greenbrier Drive intersection. We've just completed a high visibility enforcement campaign that targeted red light violations last week that we felt was very successful, and we hope to continue our enforcements along Seminole Trail in the future. Our goal certainly is to keep our highways safe and promote responsible driving behavior. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. Thank you. We have to be Alan Sumter.
Okay, can you hear? Okay. I didn't know if you're here just a little bit. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alan Sumter. I am the VDOT Charlottesville Residency Administrator. I'm responsible for VDOT activities here in Albemarle and in Greene County. I want to thank David and the Forest Lakes Homeowners Association for inviting us to come to the meeting tonight. To talk with you and share some information. Following the tragic crash that occurred in early May, there were a lot of calls, emails, letters of concern about the safety of the Route 29 and Ashwood Boulevard intersection. I'm sure probably a lot of those came directly from some of you that are here in from the room. And some of you may recall having seen a response, an email that I sent out during that time, where that we asked for your patience while that we perform some investigation and analysis on this intersection and this portion of corridor of Route 29. Now, from VDOT's perspective, that's involved a number of personnel. And the first thing that I would like to do is kind of just start out kind of acknowledging some of the VDOT staff that we have present with us here tonight. And I'll do that by just touching a little bit for those of you that might not know on, again, some, a little bit of our VDOT organizational structure. Again, I'm your local administrator. I work here in an office that's located right here in Charlottesville, located around 250, just outside of Hancock's there. extent. So I'm one of the folks that are here that traveling the roads with you on a day-to-day basis. Also from my office, I want to acknowledge you here have one of my assistants in the back of the room, Mr. Joel DeNunzio. Joel will just stand down. Joel works with us in our office. Now, our Charlottesville residency is one residency that is composed of the Culpeper District, which consists of nine counties. Our office is based there in Culpeper, and I'd like to acknowledge we have with us tonight our Culpeper District Administrator, Mr. Clint Miller. We also have with us what many of us know seem to be the face of VDOT for many of us through lots of reports on TV and in the media. It's our public affairs manager, Mr. Lou Hatton. Let me stand right over there. Okay. When it comes to our traffic engineering operations and our management of red lights, pavement markings, traffic accident investigations, and so forth, we have a staff that is service that works at the home office out of Stanton, Northwest Regional Operations, and that is headed by our Regional Operations Director, Mr. Dean Gustafson. Assisting him with that is our Regional Traffic Engineer, Mr. Matt Schott. And also acknowledge here with us tonight the board and a couple other members of their staff, Mr. B.J. Kulkarni and Mr. Bill Park. Okay. So these are staff that's been involved here in reviewing this location. So as I said, we asked for your patience when you made that inquiry, and we appreciate you doing that. I was thought we did some analysis. So I guess the question has been for many of you is what's been going on during the last month and a half. Well, just a little bit of information for you. It's VDOT's policy in our practice that we look at and investigate all serious crashes, and especially those that involve fatalities. The time for us to investigate those, it varies depending upon the complexity of the location. In complex situations, we often are able to do that analysis directly out of my office. At times, it requires that we call in Mr. Gustafson and his staff. So during this time, when this one occurs, we ask for Mr. Gustafson and his staff to get involved in it early. And I would like to publicly thank him for committing about every available resource he had to that task. I'm going to turn the meeting over to him here in just a moment and ask him to come to you. He's going to present the findings that have come from the study that's been underway and go over our plans for safety enhancements that we plan to make and our timetable of implementation. Okay.
Good evening, everyone. As Alan said, one of the things that is a standard practice with VDOT as an organization is to look at serious injury crashes and fatalities after each time they occur. As Alan said, they range in complexity. Some are simple. We make a field visit, we make some adjustments, add some signing, etc. There are others that are a little more involved. This is one, given the volume of traffic, the folks that use this corridor was a little bit more involved for us. first thing I'm going to do is provide you a little bit of an overview of traffic safety. I think the sergeant talked about traffic safety very well, but going to focus on some other things in terms of how do we look at traffic safety. Going to then communicate what our findings were. We will go through, I'll walk you through the recommendations and then discuss our implementation plan for implementing those improvements. I'm sure everyone in this room is very familiar with 29 in Ashwoods, as I'm sure many of you use it every single day. This is an aerial view of the intersection of 29 in Ashwoods. A couple points I wanted to cover in opening, and I'm sure, again, why we've talked about this before. Why this assessment? We do look at all roads after every crash to make sure that we can make them safer. Our goal is, with the limited dollars that we have, to improve the safety of our transportation system, improve its operation, and we're committed to trying to reduce the number of injury crashes and fatalities in the Commonwealth. And we certainly want to do our part as we try to achieve that goal. One question, does VDOT look at crashes before they occur? Do we have to wait until somebody is injured or killed before we do an investigation of a road? And the answer is yes, we do look at it before. We have a proactive program as part of our organization and operations focused on proactively looking at those safety hotspots. Our staff, working within our region as well as centrally, look at our top 10 safe locations within each district to determine where we have these high crash locations, both in terms of numbers of crashes, crash rates, number of people injured, and number of fatalities. We also have begun, this about a year ago, a statewide initiative called the Strategically Targeted Affordable Roadway Solutions, or STARS program, that is focused on just what it says, taking the limited dollars we have in making safety improvements and targeting those to the intersections and the roadways that have the most crash problems and need the attention. To give you an example, in this area, we are looking at Route 53 along its entirety and Route 20 along its entirety, and I believe last fall we completed a road safety audit along Route 29 south of here between Hydraulic Road and Royal Road. So again, we do have a program geared at looking at crashes before they occur. Some may ask, how do we go about improving traffic safety? I think the first sergeant talked about a number of the behavioral side, but there are really three E's that when you talk about traffic safety, not only here in Elmhurst County, but around the country, and that is engineering, enforcement, and education. And it really takes all three. We want to try to engineer the transportation system, make it as safe as possible for you to drive on. We need to have enforcement to make sure that folks are following the rules of law and obeying the regulations that are in place. And we have education. That's where the Department of Motor Vehicles, that's their main charge, to make sure we educate the motorists, that they understand the rules and regulations, understand the differences and all the signs that you see out there, so that you can have a predictable response as you drive to and from work, to and from travel. One of the things that the State Police, VDOT, and the DMV started last year was the Highway Safety Campaign, really focused on trying to improve our driver behavior, because it's all of us. And that's a campaign that fortunately we've seen a reduction in the number of fatal crashes from last year. The running total for this year, where 395 folks have been killed, that's down from 484 last year. So we, the citizens of the Commonwealth, are helping to make our roads safer by looking at what we can do to improve our behavior on the roadways. Some of the findings in our assessment of this intersection, this section of Route 29 has a traffic volume of 51,000 vehicles per day. To put that in context, That's higher than many sections of Interstate 81. Sections up near Winchester have a higher volume, but most of 81 through Shenandoah County, parts of Augusta County, this is a higher traffic volume. So you have to think about that. That's a lot of traffic moving over an area just outside your front door. We have over 3,100 vehicles move through this intersection every hour in the morning. That's a lot of vehicles. We have almost 4,000 vehicles using this intersection in the afternoon. The morning peak period is 7:45, 8:45. The evening is 5 until 6. We also had to take a look at, it's called single head visibility. That's to ensure that as a motorist that we can see the single heads. And fortunately, the single heads, we have adequate visibility to be able to see that, and it meets the standards that govern. Let me mention that there are a number of publications that are available for the states that we use across the country. One of them, the Manual and Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and while it's a very technical laden book, its intent is to ensure that we have consistency across the country in our traffic control devices, so that when you see a stop sign in Virginia, it has the same meaning as it does in Florida, Texas, Montana, etc. We also took a look at a stopping sight distance. And this is a measure to ensure that you have adequate time that when you see a signal change or a vehicle in the roadway, the time it takes your brain to process that information and put your foot on the brake, and then the time for the car to stop is what we measure. And we meet the standard on 29 northbound and on Ashwood Boulevard, that there's plenty of stopping sight distance. We are slightly less than the standard on 29 South, about 20 foot short. That was one of our findings. And we also took a look at the stopping sight distance. I think many know, especially as you go northbound, you come over at Crest Hill, and you have a little flat area before the light. But many times, much like today, you have traffic backed up beyond there. And it does meet the standard during those typical backups. And we, through some modeling, we were able to demonstrate that. Again, here's a view as you approach the intersection northbound on Route 29. Again, you can see some of the vegetation that's there. You can see the lights. This must have been taken at 2 in the morning. There's no traffic here. Saturday, Bill, is that what you said? This was not today, I assure you. Next is the southbound approach. And I think you can see a little bit in this picture, this sight distance is not quite as good as it is the northbound side. That is a little bit tougher to see, especially if you're trying to see a vehicle within the intersection that may be crossing the intersection. And by the way, this was not the driver taking the picture. We also did an operational analysis of the intersection to see how does the intersection operate? Do we have issues with moving traffic through it? We use a concept called level of service, which is nothing more than a measure of the delay that you would experience as a driver going through the intersection. And in the morning, overall for the intersection, we have minimal delay. Now, some may say, well, I've tried to get through there southbound on 29. And I might have some issues, or it might take me a while to wait. When you look at the intersection in whole, it operates with minimal delays. You may have a few individual movements, but may be worse than others. In the afternoon, I don't think it's a surprise to this audience that we have a level service E, that the intersection is operating at capacity. And what that means is we have very little room available, given the roadway geometry that we have, to move more traffic through it. So that 4,000 cars per hour, about what it can handle. We can try to squeeze a little bit more in there, but you know that's about it. Speed limit. The speed limit, one of the other things that we found is we were going through our assessment, and one of the reasons that it took us a while to go through this study was that when we started looking at the speeds, 55 miles an hour, we quickly recognized that we needed to do a speed study. Where we go out and measure the flow of traffic and how fast it's moving. And when we started getting into it, We recognized that we had to extend the limits of our view beyond just this intersection, and we went from Polo Grounds up to Airport Profit, which I think folks that travel, that's kind of a natural travel pattern. When you get beyond Airport Profit, you don't have as much density and development on the side of the road that will influence you as a driver. It was a natural breaking point. Let me clarify one of the items that we've talked about is that there are differences in the yellow signs and the white signs that you might see on the roadway. As you approach this intersection, there are signs that have a yellow plaque, picture of a signal that say 35, and that's an advisory sign. And that means to guide you as a motorist that you should advise that you're approaching a signalized intersection, use caution, and be prepared to slow down. And that contrasts to a speed limit 55 sign, which is a regulatory sign indicating that's the maximum speed that you can travel at a facility. Again, want to help understand the difference. We have some existing signing that is out there. We have a signal ahead sign to warn motorists of the upcoming signal. We have a watch for stop traffic with flashing yellow beacons at 35 miles an hour. And we also have a school bus stop ahead sign northbound on 29. Again, to warn the motorists of an upcoming school stop. This is an example picture of some of the signs that I talk about. The watch for stop traffic with the flashing yellow and the advisory 35 mile an hour sign. The other important thing in our assessment, and probably the area that most folks are interested in, is the crash data. When we look at safety of an intersection, we need to look at it over time, because in any one year, you can have some anomalies. From the period of 2003 to 2007, we had 102 crashes at this intersection. We had 32 of those 102 involved folks that were injured, resulting in 47 people that were actually injured, whether it be other drivers or passengers. Now, during the period from 2003 to 2007, we did not have any fatal accidents. Of course, we had the one in May, which was not included in that number, but it's certainly something that we took a look at and tried to understand that crash and what some of the causes were that we could help with on the engineering side. This intersection has ranked as one of the higher locations for injury and fatal crashes in Augusta County over a three-year period. It gets a lot of volume, and so it has a high number. Again, matching what the sergeant said, Hydraulic and Rio are ahead of this intersection. Crash types. We have to look at what types of crashes are happening. 67% are rear-end type crashes. This is what we would expect at a signalized intersection. You put up a traffic light, you stop motorists, and you have to pay attention. And we traditionally see that. We had, out of the 102, 69 involved rear-end collisions. We also had 13% were angle type, or the term T-bone. 13 of those fit that category. And again, this helps us to understand the kinds of accidents and crashes that are occurring so we can then develop some strategies around those. Let me walk you through some of our recommendations. The first is to install a signal ahead and rumble strips on the pavement. And the intent of this improvement is to be able to get the motorist's attention that they're coming up to a traffic signal and to pay attention. And it, by just, that shaking of the vehicle will wake that driver up and get their attention to focus on a signal ahead. The next recommendation is installing what we call controller-actuated beacons. We currently have the flashing lights that advise you of an upcoming intersection. But now what we're recommending is that we actually tie that into the traffic signal controller. So when the light turns red, then it advises the motorist that the signal is red and that they should use caution. It also will help the motorist to be warned of up-stop vehicles. And again, the measures we have are a little more passive. This is a more aggressive and active measure that we're recommending here. The next one is, it's our recommendation to reduce the speed limit on Route 29 from 55 down to 45 miles an hour. We do have the concurrence of state, Virginia State Police as well as Delaware County, and to change the speed limit from Polo Grounds Road up to Airport Profit and reduce that to 45 miles an hour. Concurrently, in our conversation, it became very apparent that in order for us to be able to, in Elmhurst County, to be able to enforce the new speed limit, they needed a safe place to pull over. This section of Route 29 doesn't have any shoulders. We wanted to find some quick, low-cost ways that we could provide them a safe place to pull vehicles over without the expense of many major widening. And we're going to recommending that we install pullouts at strategic locations where we can do it in a cost-effective way for them to be able to pull motors over. We have talked to Mr. Shiflett about this one. We are recommending relocating the Forest Lake South Entrance sign back away from the intersection and relocating the stop bar a little bit closer to improve sight distance. PJ, could you jump to the next slide for a minute? Come back. This is an example of what I mean. If you see this vehicle here cannot see if a motorist that would be coming northbound on Route 29 and makes it very difficult to see. So if we move the stop bar closer to the intersection, move the Forest Lake sign back some more, it'll give that driver the ability to see down Route 29 in the event that a vehicle is coming as they proceed through the intersection. As you saw from the last picture, we need to trim the vegetation through this area to improve sight distance and really sign visibility. We have a number of signs that you saw from some of the previous pictures where it's difficult to see. So we're recommending that we trim the vegetation to improve the visibility to those signs, and it'll improve the overall sight lines through the intersection. That's one thing we clearly noticed, and we're recommending that occur. The next one is installing signal ahead sign at Ashwood Boulevard. This is just an advance warning of the signal. There is a curve that is just before the intersection, and we want to make sure that the motorist coming out of Forest Lakes recognizes that there's a signal ahead and they need to be prepared to stop or slow down. The next one is a little bit of, I'll say, engineering ease. One of the things we also did was to just double check all the yellow and all red times through the intersection. We've recently had a small change in the way we calculate those. And so as part of our review, we're recommending that we add an additional half a second yellow on 29. And really, 29 northbound, we had adequate yellow time. It was 29 southbound. We needed to add another half second. And we're recommending a huge 0.4 seconds of all red to Ashwood Boulevard to go from 2.6 up to 3. Hopefully many of you won't notice that 0.4 seconds. I know I probably won't. And lastly, I'm sure folks today that were headed home saw this. We desperately need to coordinate the signals along this section of Route 29 to Polo Grounds Road to Airport Profit. I'm sure many of you heard from my comments earlier. We have begun an effort to coordinate these signals. We have an existing system that goes from Hydraulic up to Polo Grounds Road. With all the development north of there, we really need to continue that up to Airport Profit, and we're recommending that we do that. One more. We put together, working with Alan and his staff and my staff, an implementation plan for these recommendations. And we've also tried to outline who is within our organization is going to be responsible to put these in place. As you can see for the first, the signal ahead, most of these, as we walk through these, we can get done by Labor Day. That's our goal, is to get it done before we get back into the school season. But this summer, we can get some of the markings installed. The controller-actuated beacon is a little bit more complicated for us because we've got to run some conduit and connection into the traffic signal. That's going to take us a little bit of time to do, and there's some technology improvements we need to make in order to accomplish that. So it's going to take us a little bit longer. The speed limit reduction, we've got to get some additional approvals statewide before we can do that, and we've already begun that effort to try to accelerate that, and we're hopeful by, again, the end of the summer we can implement that recommendation. The safety pullouts, the Charlottesville Residency is going to work with El Mar County to try to strategically identify where these pullouts are that we can do in a quick manner, and they're in the process of putting together a plan to implement that. We've certainly talked to the Homeowners Association about the relocation of the sign, and I think they're in the beginning stages of trying to understand where it needs to go and how they would move it, how they would conduct that. So we don't have a completion time at this point, unless David has an update for us. The stop bar, we should be able to have that relocated this summer. Trimming the vegetation, the brush removal is something that we can do this summer, but when we talk about the tree canopy and getting that cleared up and improved, it's going to take us into the spring. Installing the signal ahead signs, again, that's something we get done this summer. The yellow and red intervals is something we're going to do in the month of July. That's one we really need to do as soon as we can. And the signal coordination, we're trying to aggressively move that forward if we can get it done before the fall. But our goal is to get that done for the fall to improve traffic through this corridor. Signal coordination will help in reducing that, improve the delay and improve the safety through that intersection. And lastly, we are going to make available on the VDOT website copies of this presentation. We also have a few copies with us of the actual safety assessment and the report. If you would like a copy, see Lou Hatter, and he can get you a copy. We have a few of them with us, but then we will have those posted tomorrow on the website. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to David. He's going to moderate. I think we'll take a break and then moderate questions.
Thank you, Alan. Let's take about a 5-minute break. I believe there's some handouts. They're going to hand out to everyone. And let's come back in 5 minutes and then we'll have a question and answer session.
There's handouts, and there's also, we've made poster boards of some of the improvements that are around the room. During the break, you can take a minute, look at those, and then afterwards.
Thank you all. Before we get started, I know Alan had mentioned the south sign. And I just want to let y'all know that the board of directors have begun discussions of relocating that south sign, and we are looking at cost and options and hope to come together as a board very quickly to make some decisions about that sign as well. Also, I'd like to point out of the Forest Lakes residents, I'm not sure how many of y'all are aware of our e-news, and it can be signed. It's you sign up on the web page, and we send out probably weekly news alerts. So if you're interested in that, I highly recommend you go to the forestlakes.net. You can subscribe to that and keep up with the recent news that goes out. And we would be putting things out too, probably with the sign relocation and things too. So I encourage any resident who hasn't done so to please sign up for that. Now we'll go ahead and start in the question and answer phase. If y'all would, if you have questions, raise your hand and I'll acknowledge, and then you can direct your question to the panel, specific to someone or whoever's best able to answer that will acknowledge your answer. Any questions? Yes, sir, ma'am.
I know this happened late in the school year. The question is, was the statistics that were gathered, was that after school, was out, or during school?
Which statistics would you...
The number of cars passing that area, is that stale? Is that old information, or is that something familiar with time, or is that something recent?
The 15... That is recent information.
Okay, so was it accumulated before school, within, or after?
I would have to defer to Bill exactly when we took that. If school was still in session.
Which data, the 51,080T or the other?
Yeah, all the data that you used to take it to.
Oh, okay. Well, some was, like the 51,000 was from published data in 2006. The other data was taken more recently.
I mean, I'm just questioning whether when school begins and the traffic increases, might that change some of your conclusions? you know, like you had a Class E, which is on the verge of capacity. Would that change those?
I would say substantially probably not, because it was in the June time frame, really June time frame. So, as I recall,
it was early June. So I think it was just.
I'm not sure the exact date. If we missed it,
the section is highly used. And secondly, you spoke of standards around the country about stopping distances, and of course we have a hilly area there. Well, no, I don't get into the long-term thing, but when you quote those statistics, I assume you're looking at not flatlands, but hilly areas in terms of stopping distances, et cetera.
Yes, we do consider the slope, the grade that you're coming down, and part of the grade that you're coming up, and adjust the standard rail plan.
Yeah, the standard is primarily based on the speed of the roadway. So that the site distance for Ashwood is not the same as 29. I think it's about 625 feet on 29 and 250 feet on Ashwood.
And one other clarification, sir. The 51,080 feet annual daily traffic, that's volume that's averaged over the year around. It's adjusted for seasonal variations and then to account for school and non-school.
Next one.
Yes, sir.
I listened to the DCOT testimony and I haven't heard anything about my question. And that is, I lived in Forest Lake for 18 years. So I cannot have asked for a particular photograph. And I would say that we are indeed fortunate that we then have the totality of Forest Lake North intersection, because the running of red lights. Trucks, mainly, but also passenger cars, is just happening every day. So I'd like to ask you, what is the criteria that you use to set from the time a light first goes yellow until it turns red? Because I'm scratching my head and say, why are all these trucks running red lights? Either they're irresponsible, or they understand because they're driving every day that I can't safely stop this fully loaded 18-wheeler in the time that I'm living before the light turns red. So can you answer that question?
Yeah, can I answer that? If I could, I'll just briefly restate the question as I heard it, sir. And you can correct me if I was wrong. Your question was, how do we set the time between when the light turns yellow to red? Is that correct?
Yeah, like, let's say you're sitting in an 18-wheeler, and you're coming down the 29, and you see the yellow light, and then
yes.
In your mind, you know, okay, I've got so many seconds to stop this truck before it turns red. And I just see these heavily loaded 18-wheelers just going right through those red lights. It's obvious that something's wrong, and I believe that's what we have to go for, right? We're not talking about passenger cars. We're talking about heavily loaded 18-wheelers. That's not part of the equation. Something is wrong.
We do take into account the vehicle mix, which is truck traffic, and car. Yes, and many times if we do have a heavy percentage of trucks, then we do that does govern as far as you know we go to the higher number. To account for the truck traffic. I will say that we're also, as part of the signal timing effort that we are doing along the 29 corridor that will be completed and we anticipate this fall, we are also reevaluating all of those yellow and red times at those other signals that you mentioned to make sure they're set correctly. But we do look at percent grade, whether it's uphill or downhill, whether there's heavy vehicles like trucks in the traffic stream. We also take into consideration, you know, the time that it takes to decelerate to a stop. So there's lots of different factors that go into that. And again, that's a standard equation that we use from the ITE, which is the Institute of Transportation Engineers, the national standard.
hard to know of what is safe. If you would advise 35 miles per hour, what would you set a speed limit at 35? That difference is between reckless 35 was a speed limit. So 35 is safe, and what you advise, and how is it sensible that 55 would be the speed limit? My second question or comment just to consider is, since this accident, I'm concerned about a secondary hazard, and that is, I'm noticing I'm doing it myself, especially with my kids in the car. When I'm pulling out 29, think about it because we're here south, I'm stopping halfway to make sure that the car's going to really stop. But I know that I'm being risky by doing that, and I'm missing a light sometimes, and making someone miss it, but I don't really care because I don't want to be hit. And twice since the new guy, I have waited because someone's running on a red light. And so I'm concerned about that because going down the intersection, and I'm just wondering if you guys consider this secondary hazard, and if so, why aren't the lights just changing now to get out of the way?
I'll address the second one. I think Matt can address your first question. Your second question was about your sight distance as you pull out of Ashwood, being able to look back and see traffic oncoming from southbound 29.
It's not about sight distance. It's about I'm worried that people aren't stopping for the red light now after.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I meant. I should say that you have adequate distance that you can look and see a potential vehicle that may or may not stop for that red light. The trimming of the vegetation is in that area is one of the things we're going to trim down, and I believe there's a little hill there we're evaluating as well to see if we can trim that hill a little bit to improve that those sight lines. Intersection sight distance and the sight triangles are something that we do look at so that as a motorist, as you're traveling through, we want to be able to look and see a potential oncoming vehicle and make it safely through the intersection. Your first question was about the 55 versus 35.
I have one other question, if I can just interject one thing. When you are going 29 south, and you can turn on green without an arrow, right? So the cars sometimes bring in four lights. Well, you'll have two or three cars pile up right there. But where they're piling up is past the light, so they can't clear the intersection until the light turns red. Is it possible that that light would turn that you couldn't turn left in the forest lakes unless you had an arrow? You know what I'm saying? Because if you're sitting in the middle of that, you're passed by the light, you don't know that it turned red. I've done it once or twice. And you're like, oops, I gotta go. But the light's already red. I don't know that because I've already passed it. When I did it, I realized I was doing it.
Out there
anymore, but I think that's a hazard because they're running a red light every time as well.
Okay. I'll try to address what you just mentioned, then I'll get back to the 35 if that's okay. What I think you just said was that when you're making a left turn from 29 south into Ashwood, correct? Because you can turn on the green, solid green ball, if there's no approaching traffic and you can safely make it cross. Vehicles will sometimes creep forward into the intersection, anticipating, waiting for that gap in traffic. Is that, okay, you're shaking your head, yeah. So I think I understand your question correctly. We realize, that's probably common nature for people to do that. And that was one thing that we considered as a recommendation, and we kind of kicked it back and forth, and that's something that we might possibly look at doing is making that exclusive, that movement, that left turn movement, where you only have an arrow, you never have that situation where you're having to yield to oncoming traffic before you make your left turn. That was something that we didn't put into our initial recommendation, but we wanted to look a little further into that as far as more detailed accident history and that kind of thing to make sure what was going on there. But that is something we can consider doing. I will say, too, that that's also a common driver behavior to creep past stop bars, and those white stop bars are there for a reason. That's the point where you should stop. Because, as you said, you can get trapped there. Myself included, I do that some too. That's something we all need to be cognizant of.
Thank you.
of what those white stop laws were for. Back to your first part. The sign that is out there now with the yellow warning sign, watch for stop vehicles. Is that right, Bill? There's a message on the sign. And then the 35 has a plaque underneath. That's also yellow, 35 mile per hour maximum safe speed. Those are typical warning signs. The maximum safe speeds are a suggested speed to alert motorists of conditions that they might not normally anticipate or recognize, such as around curves, areas where you may have vehicles entering an intersection or in the roadway or stopping suddenly, you may not anticipate. The speed limits is quite kind of a different issue than setting the regulatory speed limits in black and white, 50 miles, 55 miles per hour in this case, speed limits. And I guess your question is, why couldn't we just change it to 35 regulatory? Is that kind of what you were getting at?
I'm not suggesting 35, but if you just said we're saying 35, we believe to be the maximum safe speed in this intersection, it's kind of not sensible that it says, but you can go 55. But 35 is really the safest, but you can go 55.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to go, oh, I'm going to go 35.
You know? Yeah. I can see your point. That sign is warning more the condition to watch for stop traffic, because that traffic does back up at that intersection, and you can note that sign is well in advance of the intersection, so that you can be might have to anticipate, oh, there may be traffic stopped ahead that I can't see, and that's just a suggested additional 35 is just an additional device to make you aware I may need to slow down. You know, to that speed to compensate for that potential rear end collision or potential obstacle in the roadway.
Seems like 35 to 55 is
the biggest. You talk about sight distances quite a bit. One of the distances you referred to was 1,000 feet. 330 yards. A car traveling at 45 has how much time before he hits the brake? And in that time, how far has he traveled? And how long does it take under normal conditions to stop the vehicle? Not an automobile. I'm talking about semis, because that's what's involved here. We had a semi that killed a little girl. We're talking about sight distances, because that semi came down, he may not have had sufficient time to see the red stoplight. The young lady who was coming across, and Forest Lakes is partially responsible, we have a great big sign out there that sits there right where the second car in line can't see traffic coming from the south. So it's blocking a view. That's something. The sight distance for traffic crossing 29 to go south on 29 is absolutely horrible. The guy coming down that hill, is in a terrible position, especially with a semi. He's in a terrible, rough situation. Maybe what we need is something that says, semis, right lane. Semis, maximum speed, 40. More information at the top of the hill. A better flashing system up there, maybe further back, to identify that there is a traffic light, that it is turning red in cycles, and that you may have to stop. The more warning we give, the better off we're going to be.
Thank you.
Let me just very quickly address your question about sight distance and the effect of vehicle type on sight distance. The sight distance, as I said, does accommodate the vehicle, the driver's perception reaction time. That's the amount of time it takes you to see the light and hit the brake. It then also does account for the actual braking distance of the vehicle, whether that's a passenger car, a truck, a bus, a recreational vehicle, etc. Those all are part of the equations. With the reduction of the speed limit to 45, that will actually reduce our stopping sight distance requirements. So it will improve the ability for motorists since it will reduce the speed limit. However, if somebody is speeding, if this was a 65-mile-an-hour facility, such as Interstate 64, the stopping sight distance would be greater because you have a higher operating speed. And as you correctly asserted, it's going to take you longer to actually stop your vehicle. So, yes, somebody going through there at 65 will become a danger to all of us going through those intersections. That's no matter where we are in Virginia.
In response, may I just, I'm an engineer, was. I've also worked on traffic studies up in Northern Virginia. I'm reasonably aware of what goes on. When you talk about stopping distances, what's in the manual, we have to understand that those are written and prepared to be a general guide. There is nothing specific in there. What we have to do is accommodate the conditions that exist in a particular area. And I think that's what everybody here is looking for. We have a problem, a major problem. We don't want another little girl killed out there. So I understand and I appreciate all you've done so far. And I think that's wonderful. Reducing the speed's a big thing. I think it could be reduced even further on heavy traffic. It isn't the congested traffic that causes the problem. It's the car at the end of the congested traffic that causes the problem. He's the one that's going to speed up and try to make it through the light. That's the guy you got to look for.
Appreciate the fact that you've got down here 45 mile an hour that you're going to post. That's a standard sign, you know, isn't something you've got to go out and have made, right? Are those available?
Yes.
They are available right now as we stand here tonight ask the question. Okay. 2 days from now, I will expect to see those signs saying 45, not 50.
I know people have expressed concern about semi, which I agree, but I know within about a month period, 2 weeks before the appeal, 2 weeks after, I saw four cars go through. Run the red light there. I just leave basically once a day out of that intersection. And luckily, I caught one of them. But four times in a month period, four cars ran that red light. The other thing, the control equipment, I'm not sure the same thing, but I think in other states, maybe I'm not sure in Virginia, but where like a strobe light is put on top of the light signal. So when it turns yellow, it starts stroking. You can really see it from far away. I don't know if that's an option. That's even better. So if you pass that light, you see the strobe light going all through. Yeah, I'm not sure about in Virginia.
Yeah, you have seen in Virginia and in other parts of the country the use of little white strobe lights. They were used primarily in rural areas to grab the motorist's attention. They don't expect a signal. It was a common technique years ago. The Federal Highway Administration, who looks at traffic safety from a national perspective, there's been a lot of studies that have been completed, and they have ruled that they are no longer going to be permitted or allowed because the research showed there was no safety benefit. So with that, that's a national change that's going to be happening.
I know they always call my attention. And the last thing, I know someone mentioned Timberwood. I know, I'm surprised other times are asking actually, but the light, if you're leaving Timberwood, I mean, you're in the middle of that intersection and that thing turns yellow or red. It's not the long enough. Maybe it's just not something to clean out. But maybe that's part of the traffic or the light adjustment. But you leave and that thing will turn yellow while you're in the middle of that intersection if you're going across to the Target or Hollywood town.
We can look at that. Yeah.
We'll will be part of our single coordination. We can look at the timing for that whole corridor.
Garl?
Two comments. One, on the stretch of 29 from Forest Lake South all the way up to Profit Road, there has in fact been one fatality probably 3-4 years ago, which was also a red light run. That was at the Hollymead intersection. So I think a lot of what we discussed tonight really needs to be extended all the way through the airport Profit Road intersections. They're just a history carrying on. A second comment is that the northbound lanes of 29, that topography is from 1930 when 29 was put in place. There was some bit of a road that headed north, but the true state highway 29 was put in 1930 to 1932, and this road still exhibits that topography. That should have been changed when phase three of Route 29 improvements that started way back at Hydraulic Road, coming up to Walmart, then the bridge improvement. Phase three was to take us all the way up to Airport Road. Three lanes, I'm sure, of revised topography. What happened? Lean times. State government couldn't come up with the funds. Then we had a chance of maybe improving it with the Western Bypass. County government squashing that. This, you know, what we see here is really just infrastructure that is years, decades behind times. And I say, Mr. Bell and Mr. Boyd, you know, get off the pot. You know, 20-year discussions on items are not any use. We really need to have a plan put forward, proposed, allow a discussion period, 5-7 years, which would be short. And if nobody can come up with anything better, or, you know, you got to move forward. Even if it means raising money, taxes, we got to do it. I mean, we just can't wait and wait and wait. And it's only this. That's just one aspect. We literally are traveling through. We can complain about this, but we go to a soccer game in Northern Virginia. We're going to pass similar situations where this discussion has happened before, and we're seeing it. So we really just need to come to grips with this infrastructure problem. So please, just don't delay things anymore.
Yeah, one statistic I didn't hear discussed, and maybe one of the VDOT officials, if they have calculated this or discussed this, I'm not a transportation engineer, but I looked some of this up. Crashes per million entering vehicles, so we can figure out how dangerous this intersection is compared to similar intersections around the Commonwealth. And based on statistics I got from VDOT, the crashes per million entering vehicles for this intersection would be 1.096. The average for four-lane signal intersections in the Commonwealth, based on an eight-year study from the National Cooperative Highway Research Program, is 0.25, so this intersection is over four times more dangerous than the average intersection of its type. And I'd be interested to know if you have a crash per million entering vehicles analysis for this intersection.
We do have that data. We also now report it in critical crash rates, which is a somewhat complicated formula to normalize some of those crashes. In our appendix to the report, there's in the speed study that we did, we do have those crashes, and that is the crash history is one of the reasons that contributed to lowering that speed limit to 45, because you're right, along this section,
We are in many times twice or three times the statewide average for similar locations. So that was a strong, you are correct, that's a strong factor for this corridor to reduce the speed.
And the second point is, when I looked up the minimum site stopping distance and looked up reports from the Federal Highway Administration and on AASHTO, they were only reporting grades up through 8%. What is the grade there, 15%? Probably double what the maximum is in the report. So I would assume that would mean that it's a lot harder for vehicles to stop on those grades. And I'm surprised that I didn't see more data about what you do when you're faced with a very steep grade like that.
I have two questions for the sergeant. One is on this 35-mile-an-hour advisory. If you can clock somebody at 40, can't you give them a ticket for reckless driving? Or is that a practical thing to do?
No, our position is that unless there's some other circumstances present, a person going 40 miles an hour in a posted 55-mile-an-hour zone, even though they're exceeding the safe speed, that in and of itself would not be cause to ticket them. If there's other circumstances present, like if there's inclement weather, that factor would certainly be something that we would consider.
My other question was, when they put in the turnout for safe stopping, will that make it easier for you to get a radar car in there, or can you get a radar car in there now and actually get evidence of people are speeding?
Well, I think the purpose of the improvements to the shoulder will be to help us safely pull cars over, not to necessarily do enforcement from that spot. But right now, we're kind of limited in places where we can pull vehicles over safely. Because of the width of the shoulder. So, and we do have some new technology now, some laser radars that we're putting into use that allows us to specifically pinpoint certain vehicles. In other words, it's not based on the Doppler principle, but it's based on a laser where we can actually identify specific cars that are traveling along a section of highway.
Thank you.
So I'd like to go back to the speed limit reduction of 45. I agree totally with the gentleman who said he'd like to see it in 2 days. What I didn't hear was, you'll see it in 2 days. I'm a practical guy. I want to understand what can we do to add the extra pressure to whoever we need to seek approval from so we can see it in 2 days. Because we will help you out.
I will say that the study is our completed study is in the hands of the proper individuals to make the approval to change the speed limit.
Are those individuals here?
No, they are not. They are in our main office in Richmond, central office in Richmond. The commissioner has the approval authority to set speed limits. He has delegated that authority to the chief of system operations, and the chief engineer. Thank you. And that goes through a review process at that level. It's already in their hands. They're aware. We've briefed them that this is a critical time sensitive issue. It's in the right hands at this point. So we certainly understand the need to implement these improvements as fast as we can. We are going to make every effort we can do to get these improvements put in place. And so
right.
we will follow up with those folks to ensure we can get this done as expeditiously as possible.
And I appreciate that. I work with the federal government, so I understand how bureaucracies can affect things. I also understand how additional pressure can help affect things to make them go faster. And I would offer that up. Whatever would help press the issue.
I think you already have with our CTV member here. I assure you that it will move through.
We're, of course,
Lake resident, we're all very encouraged by the long-term solution that you offer. I'm going to ask Mr. Shipley now. In the meantime, I have noticed that we've had some police visual outlines here today. I think it is a red light one. I'm going to ask our community associates to cough up the money to continue that police presence, because I have a feeling it's not in the budget. It's an ongoing thing out there. So why don't we, as an association, put some money for some off-duty policemen and send them out there daily if we have to, so we can implement all these
Forest Lakes Community Association currently has an adequate budget for off-duty security, and we regularly employ off-duty security throughout the year. As part of this, as issues arise, I ask them to really concentrate in certain areas. And, of course, that entranceway is the one that is getting attention, as well as some other areas that we're having speeding issues and things for, too. So good thing is the money is budgeted and in place for security, off-duty security, to supplement the officers that are also in the patrol, Forest Lakes Falls within that patrol district.
Okay, so we can expect to see that ongoing, that particular intersection throughout the week. We can expect to see police officers that monitor them.
The security that we deploy, we give every area as much attention as possible. The one thing that is a little bit different about that intersection there is involves enforcement outside of Forest Lakes itself. So our entranceways we do give attention to, as well as I can assure you, I'm in frequent contact with Sergeant Mainzer, and I can personally attest that very, very regularly right now, I'm not coming through and actually seeing them perform selective enforcement at that intersection. I compliment them for that. Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead. You mentioned that we have security within Forest Lakes to handle situations. We happen to live pretty far up the ridge, so when we leave and come down Ashwood Boulevard, we're coming down almost the entire length of Ashwood Boulevard, and it just startles us how often, as we're coming down Ashwood Boulevard, people are running the stop signs coming out of their own little developments.
Right.
So we have problems right here within Forest Lakes.
Correct, and that's one reason why we do. And just to let you know also, in the off-duty security, also we deploy them, especially in the summertime during the nights, to look after the recreational facilities and to keep checks in the room. And we also specifically, I do the schedules, where we're deploying them in the morning rush hour and at the evening rush hour, where their specific job is for traffic enforcement. So we do try to do that. Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple of questions. First, a comment. I came prepared to ask for some specific reliefs for the medium term, and I appreciate that you guys have come to the table with everything I think I would have asked for, so rubble strips, et cetera. So I did want to say thank you. I think this was timely. Probably the only thing I would have maybe asked for was a longer delayed green. I think an additional 0.4 seconds. I'd rather sit there rather than have somebody hurt. My specific question is, we put these phased implementations in place, and they, of course, are near term. How and when are you planning to measure the effectiveness of these changes and report back to us on them? It looks like everything will primarily be done somewhat towards the winter time. So I don't know what your process is for measuring on the changes to see if they are sufficient. So that's question number one. And then I think the second question some other folks have alluded to is, we appreciate that this has been, the Ashwood Boulevard, and I promise not to get too far afield here, but are there plans to do a more comprehensive study from Polo Grounds Road up through Prophet? I mean, I know we've addressed this intersection specifically, and it's a particular meeting to me because my car was totaled at Polo Grounds Road. So I want to know, are there plans to do a more comprehensive study for more of the stretch of the road?
Yes, in terms of how we measure the effectiveness, we don't, for every safety improvement, I would say we monitor it. We don't specifically go out and check before and after. We can certainly do that in this case. That's not a problem. I will caution that when it comes to crash data, safety data, usually takes time to do that. So it's something we will monitor to see if we're having any recurring problems. And at some point, we can probably do a study. The challenge is, even if we do one, say, a year later, it may not be enough time to be able to conclusively say that, you know, we saved this, you know, number of crashes from occurring. Because one of the factors, you know, if less people travel the road, it's less chance for an accident or for a crash. So that's one of them. You had asked also, I think, about us taking a look at this whole section from airport proper to polo grounds.
Correct.
I don't recall where that stands in our SARS program, where that stood. I'll have to check. We'll have to look into that.
Because I know nothing. I went to your website, looked at the 2025 stud area plans, and there's nothing for that stretch of road in the works. I'm assuming there would need to be some sort of study for any kind of plans to hit that.
We could do a road safety audit. It could be one of the things that we look at for this corridor. I'm just off the top of my head, I don't recall where in our objective data we looked at where this section of 29 lined up. As I said, we're right now doing some work on 53 and Route 20.
Can I have one more follow-up question? Back to this gentleman as far as the speed limit sign. It's stated that it's going to be late summer of 2008. Is that the end of August? Is that the end of September? And I guess I'm asking because I want to know when it's time for us to send emails to Connie Sorrell, who's the Chief of System Operations, and Commissioner Eckern, et cetera. You know, how, if it doesn't show up by a certain time, I think as a community, we are kind of obligated to push it along.
Fundamentally, you can start with Alan and myself on both of these because we have the responsibility to see that these are implemented. So,
so when we say late summer, are we talking September? What are we talking?
For what, the speed limit?
Yes.
I think we heard tonight if we wait till late summer,
it's
going
to be tough.
So the next is going to be accelerated as best we can.
We'll start August 20th.
Okay.
Gentlemen, the greeting didn't pop. First, I just have a question. I'm not sure if I heard the challenge. Well, first of all, thank you for your time. The 51,000 cars per year, that's going to take that 2006.
Yes.
It varies the range of the data is all the way from polo grounds over to airport proper. And so the highest was is in this section up here, the northern section, 51,000. So ADT per year, that's average for seasonal adjustment and also for the trucks and different kinds of vehicles that makes the mix of traffic.
My point was it was 2 years old by the time.
Right.
Like quarterly, I can see more traffic on the road.
Absolutely. And when data becomes available, perhaps when we do an after study, we might have more recent data.
And we all do appreciate all the benefits we've taken, but to echo the sentiments of the gentleman on the front row, I think a lot of this is sort of a band-aid approach. There was a 5-year plan. Common knowledge of 5 years, seven years ago, where we planted out, widened out, to match up south and north. And so, where does that stand? When is that going to come? Because my intuition is that this is a band-aid approach. We're still going to be running the problem until it's more gets done. I mean, the volume of the San Antonio State is 381. I can't imagine where it's going. So, where's the leadership as far as the look at the big picture?
I'll defer to the leadership.
As far as long-term planning is right now, there is a project in our primary six-year plan. It is in there for preliminary engineering. It's not funded for right-of-way or construction, and there's presently right around $2.8 million funded for that preliminary engineering. We hope to begin that preliminary engineering in the near future. As I said, presently there's no funds for the right-of-way or construction that would be needed.
Bob? I'm concerned that the controller-actuated beacons are counterproductive. If the driver is going north on 29, sees the indication that the light ahead is not red, they have to keep on going. Then they reach the peak of the hill. You only find out there is a lot of traffic when you back up from the last red light. seems to me, if I saw this, this is counterproductive.
We certainly recognize the, and we had a lot of conversation about, do we install a more active system rather than a passive with flashing lights, warning of a motorist. We recognize this puts a lot of reliability at our link to the signal system, because it will tend to build in driver behavior with folks expecting that light's going to work. We recognize that, but we also recognize the value that it will have, that it'll get the motorist's attention rather than a flashing light that I'm sure is ignored by just about everybody. So, Matt,
if I may add to Dean's remarks, one of the things, I mean, we're gonna obviously have to design that device for this location to make it work right. And we've already had some preliminary discussions about how it should work and how we should design it. And we'll probably have some more discussions, but you're absolutely right as far as making your observation, because that's one of our concerns as well. So one of the features we'll be talking about to address that is, you know, this device will come on at the towards the end of the green phase on 29, and it will start flashing so that the vehicle, when they pass that device, they'll know that they won't have time to make it through the green, so they'll have to slow down and stop. Now, once it turns red, that flasher will continue flashing through that red phase. Then when it goes green again, normally what happens is that device will turn off as soon as it turns green, but we know that traffic will most likely be queued up or backed up at the intersection, as you observed. So one of the features we're going to talk about to counteract that is to make that device stay on for I don't know what that period is going to be, but a period of time, a period of seconds, a minute maybe, you know, we don't know yet, we're still designing, but to fix, address that problem that you just observed. So.
Mr. Gustas, sorry,
Gustas,
Dean, I'd like to follow up real quickly on one of the questions asked by a young lady over there. Were there any tests to actually see if people were following the speed limit or the recommended speed limit of 35 miles per hour in the intersection? If not, why not?
Yes, I'm trying to go through a report. In the actual speed study that we did along this corridor, one of the most important things we do is measure the speed. Let me just cite a couple examples. You will hear the term 85th percentile speed, meaning that 85% of the traffic is below that and 15% technically are above that speed. It's a measure at which most motorists should travel. We do also look at the 50th percentile, which is the mean, if you will. The 85th percentile, if you look at 29 just north, 29 northbound, just north of Ashwood Boulevard, at an 85th percentile speed of 53 and a 50th percentile of 49. So that was the range of speeds there. As we move further up the road, it ranges from 55 to 49 for the 85th percentile. The lowest that we had was on 29 southbound, just north of 1722,
is that what's around 1722?
Is that
Hollywood
Drive?
Yes, I think so.
No,
that's
1520.
That's
it had an 80th percentile of 42.
That's worth. Worth. I'm sorry.
So again, there is a range of speed to it, but yes, we do. That is one of the important factors that we look at.
Thank you.
The dangerous intersection. Everybody appreciates that. He said that one of the ways to make this intersection safer is to reduce that speed limit. And I'm having a hard time, kind of all joking aside about the process, and the group responsible, I understand VDOT responsible for making the decision about speed limit. And the gentleman's point, I think, is well taken. If the line people here for VDOT you all, the professional founders, seem to believe that that speed limit needs to be reduced, and that's your recommendation. You know, I understand I've worked in government for a long time, and I understand things move, but I'm having a hard time understanding why it takes so long. And if you all are making that recommendation, presumably the people in Richmond would accept your recommendation.
Well,
why does it take so long?
Yeah, the question is, of course, why does it take so long? Let me just share with you a couple things that are involved in establishing speed limits in Commonwealth. Once we do a speed study, and we'll be changing our process to have that signed by a professional engineer down the road, but we send it to our traffic engineering division, and they look at it to make sure that our study is consistent and we're using the correct methodology so that we are consistent. If we're dropping or changing the speed limit on one section of road, we can change it on another. Before we send it up to our central office to get, you know, final approval and signature, we work with our residencies to make sure that there's support within the county and state police and local law enforcement that based on their observations on the enforcement side, that this speed limit change is appropriate. And so usually, in many cases, that's where some of the delays are in having that conversation with boards of supervisors and others.
That's not the delay here. We approved the same day that we found out what the speed limit recommendation.
That's right. That's right.
I'm still. What's the delay? What's the delay? It's the easiest thing to do. It would solve a lot of problems. Everybody in this room understands it, and so I'm having a hard time understanding what the delay is. I hear your answer, but I don't understand it.
But you're probably not going to like my answer, but this is the answer. We at the local level don't have approval authority to approve that speed limit. We make a recommendation of what it should be based on our engineering study, and then it goes, like I said, to the chief of system operations and the chief engineer, who have been delegated that authority by the commissioner to approve it. That's the reality of it, of who has the approval authority. So it does go from us to be approved.
Is it in their hands now?
It is in their hands now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, may I ask
you a moment? And then the last bit, while it may seem trivial,
question on Jimmy.
Ma'am, hold on. I think they had one more.
Can I just finish that? Again, it may seem trivial, but we do also have to schedule our crews to go out there and be able to put up the signs. And of course, with Section 29, that's largely going to be done at night or off peak for safety reasons. So.
Now?
Yes.
My question is on the traffic coming from the north going south at Ashwood. As we are stopped at the stoplight approaching 29, we're looking north, but visibility is very much a detriment in that the brush and the tree growth and so on, I don't know what all is in there, but the fact is we are unable to see, for instance, an emergency vehicle coming from the north until we get out into the intersection. And to me, that is a dangerous situation because we cannot anticipate what's coming from the north.
And yes, ma'am, as part of the work that we're going to be doing, we are going to be trimming some trees and vegetation that's in that area. One thing that I will point out that we are continuing to look at, I think that you will find even so doing that, is that there is some issue with the topography of the land there. There's a slight hill right in that area as well. And so we're going to be evaluating what we can do there to try to fix some of the earth work off the hill in order to be able to confirm that as well.
Thank you.
Let's ask our local leaders and our politicians to get the phone number of each other with them.
Absolutely.
Get on the phone and say, let's make this happen as soon as you can, right now. Please.
Any other questions?
I'm a little concerned about the recommendation to coordinate the lights along this corridor. And I feel like at that particular intersection, if I think what you're talking about is to synchronize the lights as they are down 29 South at this time. So I feel like at this particular intersection, because of the hill and the synchronization, if you're coming from Polo Grounds and you see the Polo Ground light turn green, that's almost saying, oh, okay, I can speed up because I'll get through the one to Ashwood now. So that's my concern, is that rather than making a smoother ride up north on 29, that it may encourage people just to go faster. I know you do studies on that, but it just seems intuitive that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, in designing a coordinated traffic signal system, you have to look at the speed of the traffic that's going through there. And that is something through our design process that we set. And I agree, you certainly don't want to set it higher than the speed limit and create false expectations for motorists. But again, research has shown that through that we do have we can reduce the potential for only red light running, but the number of stops, which is important, to reduce the number of stops, then you reduce the likelihood and chance of another action. So that is an important design element as we design our coordinated signal system.
I had a question about the CAB location. As I'm looking at the drawing that you have here, it looks like it's past the crest of the hill. Would it make more sense to have it before or at the top of the crest of the hill?
That location has not been determined yet. We will make sure that the CAB is located as we approach the hill and not on top or past the hill, so that the motorists driving north will actually see that before to encounter a rear bumper from the car stop coming. That's just a few minutes. Thank you.
I just have a very simple question. I share the concern about trucks and the grade. Statistically, 102 crashes. How many involve trucks, and is this a disproportionately high number?
I'm not sure if we have that data. I know, I think I recall that we, on the traffic volume, that we had about a 4%. Bill, you can help me. I think we have about 4% trucks for this corridor. But I don't have in front of me the number of crashes involving trucks. But it's not a fact. I will say this. We have that information available, and we would have looked at it. If something jumped out where it was, say, 50 out of the 102, absolutely, that would have changed our recommendations.
I want to share some thoughts on going south on 29 from Timberwood Boulevard. When it's what I have this diagram on. When you get to that next light, the lane on the farthest left just ends. And I just, maybe you need to have that lane there for the first for the people that come out from Forest Lakes. But I want to know that lane on the farthest left that just ends, couldn't it be turned into a turning left only before that light where it ends at? Because they still have it as a straight, going straight through the intersection, and then ends. And if it was a turning left only, like before the intersection, you cannot be there unless you turn left. Or is there anything that can be done so people don't stay there and change over the
left? Yeah, that's one we can take a look at. We have looked at a similar situation northbound. We can take a look at it.
It'd be fairly simple to turn into a turning left only. You have a Memorial Gardens there to turn left into, and like McDonald's, Connecticut. It'd be fairly simple to say it turns left only.
Yeah, that's a good observation. We can take a look at it.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yes, sir. My name is Rob Tillich. I'm over the Realtor. What affects the chance, particularly looking at that photograph on the screen there, is that roughly 30 times an hour, the first car in the left-hand lane turning there is exposed to no sunlight. What I guess I'm perplexed about hearing the calls for action here is why that sign is still there. I mean, something which I would have thought this community could have done already, because every time, my first color has no sunlight, and I think that was probably a major contributor here. And the obverse of that is that it is a small car, and the traffic is light, and therefore moving quickly, the people coming down there who may be inclined to run the red cannot see it either. And therefore, we have a perfect storm. I think if President Reagan was here, he'd probably say, tear down that sign.
Just to point out, I mean, that sign that had been put in by the developer, that was all approved by VDOT many, many years ago. And
so let's be proactive.
I'm approved, not being proactive. Well, yeah, it definitely needs to get moved. But
so as you can tell, I'm being prepared, and that would have been solved 50 days ago.
Thank you. That's going to conclude our question and answer session. I know Mr. Bell and a couple of our panelists.
Just in conclusion for us here tonight, I want to thank you for inviting us to come here to share this time with you. You know, you all have been actively engaged in this issue from day one, and we really appreciate that. There's been a lot of good positive feedback that's come to us through the emails, the letters, the things that we've received here tonight. It is good to see the communities engaged in transportation issues, and we appreciate you doing that. And we hope that the information that we've given you tonight has been helpful. We intend to try to carry through with everything on the schedule, just like what we've given you tonight. If you have any further questions or comments that you would like to pass along to us following this, please let us know. And you can send emails, calls, whatever you feel is necessary. So again, we at VDOT, we thank you for the time that you've given us tonight.
And also in conclusion, I want to thank the residents of the Forest Lakes Community Association, as well as I see many members of the Highland Mead Citizens Association, some of the community at large. And thank you all for coming out tonight. I also want to thank our panelists, Mr. Davies, Mr. Boyd, Mr. Tucker, Mr. Wade, Sergeant Mainzer, Mr. Sumter, and other VDOT staff. Also want to give special thanks to Lou Hatter, Mr. Tucker, and Mr. Boyd for bringing the staff together to make this happen tonight. And thank you all for coming out. And again, I encourage Forest Lakes residents to subscribe to our email alert notice, and that way it's an easy way to get information out. We're going to try to put information out at least weekly on various topics that affect Forest Lakes. So again, thank you very much for coming out tonight.